This is Digital Story Podcast number 521, March 1st, 2016. Today's theme is Good Photos Under Bad Conditions. I'm Derek Story. In the movie Bridge of Spies, James Donovan asks accused Russian spy Rudolf Abel, "Aren't you worried?" Abel calmly replies, "Would that help?" That was clearly one of the best lines in movies last year, delivered by Mark Rylance, who earned an Oscar for Best Supporting Actor. In the end, both Donovan and Abel survived their challenges. Every line of work has its obstacles. You don't have to be a Russian spy to face adversity. This week's show focuses on challenges that photographers encounter, and some suggestions for overcoming them and returning home with great images. Good photos under bad conditions. So I have six basic challenges that we might all face at one time or another, and some that many of us have faced already. I'm not sharing these with you so much because I don't think you know this. It's more of a refresher. It's more of a reminder, because what happens to us is we tend to get in our routines, right? We tend to walk out the door every time with kind of the same kit, the same frame of mind, the same, right? And so sometimes when we walk out the door, though, we have a little bit of information, a little bit of reconnaissance that maybe we might be encountering something a little different, bad weather, the people that we're going to be hanging around, the environment that we'll be in, stuff like that. And maybe we want to make a few adjustments before we go there, just to ensure, A, that we're safe. that's always at the top of my list. And B, that even though we might face some adversity, we come back with a few images. Okay? So let's go through these six. At the top of the list, inclement weather, right? Which, hey, by the way, sometimes makes for great photographs. It's not like inclement weather is automatically a bad thing. It is, possibly a very good thing. So one thing that I always like to have with me, if I'm going to be in rain or snow or something like that, is a lens hood. I think lens hoods, we think about them for sun, right, to protect against flare. And sometimes those of us that are event photographers think about them to protect the front of the lens when we're in crowded environments. But they are also very helpful for keeping precipitation off the front of the lens. And it's not that the precipitation is going to hurt our glass. Glass doesn't melt, at least not by water. But because it messes up a shot, it does. Doggone it. And if a drop or a snowflake goes on the front element there when you don't know it when you're taking a shot, on your LCD, everything's going to look fine. And then you get on the computer and you go, whoa, what is that fuzzy thing right there, right on that person's face? How did it do that? Well, that was a drop that came in, landed on the front element, and messed things up. And it's very annoying because you probably won't spot it right away. Spot it right away, yeah. Anyway, lens hoods really help with this. And so the 1-2 punch that I like is a protection filter with a lens hood. Lens hood helps cut down the amount of moisture and stuff that can get on the front of the lens. And then the filter, really what that allows me is to wipe it off quickly. I don't have to baby it, right? I don't have to go, oh, I have to pull out my microfiber cloth and gently rub in a circular motion. No, you don't have to do that with a filter on there. You just you take your shirt, take the cuff of your shirt, make sure not the part with the buttons on it, but the cloth part, and just rub that thing down really quick, get it dried off and get shooting again. This is not time for, a baby cakes activity here. So you want to get it dry, you want to take a shot. So lens hood and protection filter, really nice thing to have in inclement weather. It really helps prevent surprises, and we hate those kinds of surprises. Now, I don't put my camera in plastic bags and stuff anymore. I used to do the thing where I cut a hole in the Ziploc, put my hands in the back, do all that. And it was just too hard to take pictures is what it came down to. So now I don't worry about it. The way that I work now with inclement weather is I like to have a good shoulder bag that I can get in and out of quickly. And I think that just works better. You know, the cameras are pretty robust, and I have weather-resistant camera bodies. My OMD EM5 Mark II is definitely weather-resistant, and I have some weather-resistant lenses for it. So I don't have to worry too much about that. By the same token, I don't want to leave it, you know, in the pouring rain. I pull it out, shoot, put it back in the camera bag. So I'm going that route more now than, you know, worrying about putting it in bags and stuff like that. It's just too much work, too much hassle. I feel like I lose too many shots and doesn't really need it anyway. Okay. Now, one thing that is handy is, unless it's windy, of course, is a compact umbrella. I do like to have those with me because what you can do with a compact umbrella is that you can create a little workspace for you. In bad weather, you just pop up that umbrella, you kind of hold it under your armpit. You guys know, you've done this. Hold it under your armpit there. Have your camera bag open at your belly there. Kind of work, get things set up with the umbrella and all that. You can fold the umbrella back up if you need to, or just kind of keep holding it some weird way when you take pictures. But it does create a little workspace for you when you have to maybe be fooling around in your bag, and your bag's going to be open for, you know, more than just a few seconds. So I do like that. So other than that, compact umbrella, protection filter, lens hood, good camera bag, I'm pretty much ready to roll. It's funny though, if you don't have those things, everything is so much harder. And really, when you're getting stuff on the front of your lens, it's just, oh gosh, so frustrating. All right, next item. Law enforcement and security officers. You notice I use the polite terms here. So you're going to get a lot of different opinions about this particular one, and you may have a different opinion yourself. But mine is still going to be my first rule is don't be confrontational. I just, you know, I follow the news all the time. I see what's going on. I listen to people's stories, all that. And I rarely see a better outcome by being confrontational when you're approached, whether it's reasonable or not, by a security officer or a police officer, than to have a discussion. And I think having a discussion, for me, is the better way to go. Because you'd be surprised, a lot of times having a discussion, not being confrontational right out of the chute, can lead to maybe working something out. Or at least everyone gets to leave with a little bit of pride, right? You know, if it's not going to work. And sometimes it has worked for me. So, you know, that's my recommendation as the first path. Now, where I draw the line, if anyone starts to touch me or my camera gear, then the rules change a little bit. The minute touching's involved, contact, physical contact's involved, rules change. So if someone starts to grab my arm or want to take my camera away from me or something, then my plan in that case is to leave. I'm not going to be talking. Talking is over at that point. The minute physical contact, we're done having discussion. So my plan at that point is to leave, to get as much information as I can on my way out. Badge numbers, names, you know, make sure I know the location and time, all that kind of stuff. Because what I'm going to do, what I'm most likely going to do after I'm safe and have removed myself from that situation, is I'm probably going to file a complaint. Because that cannot be tolerated. That, you know, having a discussion is one thing. You may disagree with him or her, that's one thing. But the minute they cross the line, especially if you're not being confrontational, but even if you are, the minute they cross the line, then that's a whole different matter. That needs to be addressed. And I have very little tolerance, if any, for that kind of behavior. So I'm gathering information at that point. I am retreating because I do not want something stupid to happen. And then I am going to follow up. So that is that. Third challenge, family vacation. Yeah, I had to resist putting it at the top of the list. I really did. Family vacation. You know, how do you be creative, you know, when you're traveling with the family? How do you be creative be a good family member and, you know, come away at least with some photography that you're really proud of. And I'm not talking about, you know, the heartwarming moments with the kids and, you know, the spouse and all that. That's fantastic. That's a given. Capture that stuff. That's good. But beyond that, if you're somewhere spectacular, you probably want something that's a little artistic too. So how do you do that with the family? Here's the first thing that I do for road trips. I call shotgun. I call shotgun. So, you know, I used to think that I had to drive all the time. First of all, I don't have to drive all the time. And the second thing that I've noticed is that it's actually better if I don't drive all the time. Yeah, I mean, really. So, you know, that was an assumption that I had that, you know, wasn't really based in anything that was sound in terms of reasoning. And by riding shotgun, I have found that I have gotten a lot of good pictures over the years. Now, suddenly, you know, you have what's in front of you. You have what's to the side of you. You're in control of the passenger side window. There is landscape and activity while you're driving. There's, you know, while you're waiting for stuff. There are a lot of opportunities when you're riding shotgun to get good shots. That, I mean, I have to tell you, that is a killer tip for road trips. If you're a photographer and you have an able driver that you trust and they don't care about photography, let them drive. You take pictures. That right away, that doesn't hurt anyone, okay? That's really my killer tip. But I got more here. Here's another thing that I do. I get up before everyone else, go take pictures, and then I come back and meet them for breakfast. You know, no one seems to care. I mean, everyone's on vacation. They want to sleep. They certainly don't care if I get up. You know, if you're crazy and you want to go do that, go do that. It's a great time to shoot. And then, you know, the thing I like about it is that I can start out the day with three or four images that I really like. They're under my belt. So if nothing else photographic happens that whole day, I'm okay. I got some shots. I got up early. I got some shots. Didn't have to negotiate. Didn't have to argue. Didn't have to do anything. Just got some good pictures. They're in the can. Let's have a good time. I tell you, that is a killer. That's another killer technique, something that I highly recommend. And then the last thing is be willing to negotiate. So if there's something where you say, wow, this is a really great photo opportunity, you can negotiate that. You can say, hey, I really want to take some shots here. How do you feel about dropping me off and coming back? Or if we hang out here and do this for half an hour, then, you know, we can go hit the shopping mall or whatever. Negotiate a little bit. Whatever you do, don't be ramming photography down their throat. That's really the thing that you don't want to do. You know, say, you know, you want to have everyone feel like, because it's a family vacation. It's not just your vacation. It's a family vacation. So you want to make everyone feel like they have some say. You negotiate a little bit of give and take. It's amazing how well it can work out. Those are my tips for surviving the family vacation and coming away with some photos. And yes, I put that in the category of good photos under bad conditions. We're only talking photographically. We're not talking about love and relationships and all that. That's not what we're talking about right now. Just business, okay? All right. Malfunctioning equipment. So even though I travel light, I still like to have one layer of redundancy. And these days, because I shoot Micro Four Thirds, that's not too difficult. So I have my main camera, typically be the EM5 Mark II. And then I'll carry a second body in a pouch. That'll either be the Panasonic GM5 or the Olympus OMD EM10. And just have that. And that solves so many problems. If you have a fresh card in there, in that backup camera body, a fresh battery, and then put a pancake or a body cap lens on there. The body cap lens is good, but I'll tell you, I keep the 17mm f2.8, a very thin lens, or you can use the Panasonic 20mm f1.7, or the equivalent in, you know, the camera that you use. Keep that on there, keep it in a little pouch. You know, so if the battery goes dead on your main camera, if you run out of memory, something befalls it that I don't even want to mention because I don't want to jinx anyone. All that stuff, that all can be solved just having this little backup body with you. It's not a bad idea. And that solves almost all the problems. You have a little lens on there. Worst case scenario, you know, you're shooting with your backup camera. Malfunctioning equipment, having just one backup solves so many problems. Threat of violence or theft. This is my least favorite of the bunch, especially, you know, when I read about incidents like what happened today with the Time photojournalist Christopher Morris being apparently choked, slammed to the ground during a Donald Trump rally today in Virginia. You know, you just hate to see stuff like that. You know, it appears that he crossed the line. You know, he went out of the area where they wanted the photographers to be, and then it got nuts. And this goes back to what I was saying earlier. Instead of people talking to each other, suddenly someone yells an obscenity at someone, someone reacts, and the next thing you know, you got a bad situation. Who knows what went on there? You know, it just wasn't good. My point being with that is that violence towards photographers, to me, feels like it's at an all-time high during my career. I'm not sure why this changed, to tell you the truth. I don't really understand it, but I don't like it. Photographers need, first of all, to be aware of the situation, whatever that is. Like, for instance, again, I wasn't there, so I don't know, but with Christopher Morris. All right, if you're going to cross the line to get a shot, I understand that. I'm a photographer, too. But when you're confronted, what do you say at that moment? And I think that's important. And I'm not saying you said the right thing or the wrong thing. I don't know. That's a question that I ask. Because, again, it's being aware of your situation. If you're walking around the street at night in an urban area, you've got to be aware of your situation. You know, we like to fall into the zone when we're shooting. Sometimes you don't have that luxury. You have to have your antenna up. You have to be aware of your surroundings in front of you and back of you and both sides. And if you start to see something that makes a red flag go up, then make an adjustment, you know, but you have to be aware. And then the other thing I want to say around all this is, for Pete's sakes, look out for cars and buses. Really, I cannot tell you how many times I see photographers wander out into the street, lining up a shot, totally oblivious to the traffic around them. And that is dangerous. You know, that again. Now, what I recommend, if you're going to be shooting that kind of stuff, that you need to have Photo Buddy with you and have someone spot for you while you're standing in that situation so that they can let you know when a car or bus or something like that's coming so you can protect yourself. You know, nobody wants to get hurt on this kind of stuff. And in terms of your camera gear and all of that, you know, you don't always have to take your best camera with you, right? If you know you're going into a dicey situation, take your backup body. This time, leave your favorite camera at home and shoot with something else. So just kind of think about this. But the main thing that I think is, be aware of your situation. Have your street smarts about, you know, don't take your best stuff. Don't be flaunting, you know, a bunch of camera gear. All righty? That one was kind of heavy. Sorry. fatigue and apathy. That's the last one here. One leads to the other. Fatigue leads to apathy. And my point here is, especially if you're traveling and, you know, out on location or something, and if you start to feel like you're not shooting well, that you're just, you know, you're kind of just like clicking by rote, take a break. Take a break, really. Go get a cup of coffee. Find a shady tree and put your feet up. Take a nap. Have something cool to drink. Browse the web on your iPad or your phone. Just take a break for a little bit. Recharge the batteries. Then go back and shoot. Because it's I notice this a lot with writing. And it was hard for me to learn how to be a good writer. And I'm not just talking about where to put the comma. Part of it is the whole psychological side to it and the discipline that comes with that. And one of the things that I had to learn is that I just cannot write straight for 9 hours a day and have it be my best stuff. That doesn't work. So I write. I know specific times a day that I write particularly well. So I make sure I capitalize on that. And then I take breaks and I do other stuff. I do something physical, clean up the kitchen, you know, here at the studio a bit, take out the trash, play with my cameras, watch a little TV for a minute, have something to eat, and then I go back to it. You know, and the discipline comes in going back to it, you know, it's not just staying in the break mode. And I have found that pattern parallels photography quite well, because, you know, if you're not being creative, if you're not putting energy into what you're doing, you're probably just clicking frames. And just clicking frames really is a waste of your time, in all honesty. Sure, you're going to get, you know, some basic sort of postcard shots or whatever, some documentation. But if you're really after taking good pictures, clicking frames, not the way to go. You need to have your energy up and you need to be able to focus on what you're doing. If you feel your energy waning, take a break, then go back and shoot. You'll be surprised how much better you shoot when you go back. All right? Those are my six things on how to get good photos under bad conditions. My favorite being family vacation. And my least favorite is threat of violence, and then everything else falls in between. I'm sure you know all of this stuff, but think about it. Think about it before you walk out the door. Maybe make a few adjustments, and then have a good experience out there and get some great shots. In the news, this is kind of fun. Olympus Fox Brown Limited Edition OMD EM10 Mark II launched worldwide. And this was in a couple spots. I went ahead and picked up the DP review story. A brown and chrome version of the OMD EM10 Mark II compact system camera, first announced in January, has been launched worldwide by Olympus. The new version is a limited edition, of which only 3,500 will be made and distributed. And Olympus hopes the unique collaboration and grained texture of the finish will attract collectors. The camera is the same as the standard OMD EM10 Mark II, but comes with a brown leather effect cover, a premium leather strap, and a silver-colored lens cap. It will only be available in kit with the company's 14 to 42 millimeter f3.5 to 5.6 easy pancake standard zoom lens. The OMD EM10 Mark II Fox Brown costs $899 with lens. So first of all, for a collector's edition sort of thing, that's not a bad price. But the picture is really kind of nice on this, I have to tell you. I like that particular color of brown that they chose. I don't know, it's like, I know they're calling it Fox Brown. It's like a classic brown. Now, they do call it leather effect cover. So I'm sure it looks like leather and feels like leather. Probably really isn't leather. Otherwise, there'd be no effect, right? The strap is leather. And then all I can say on the lens cap is, if it's like I have an OMD EM10 special edition that I got, one of my favorite cameras. I got the lizard skin version. It's very textured. It's black, but it's very textured. It's really neat. It's like a reptile skin. And it had the leather strap, which I really dig. And it had the lens cap. The lens cap I don't like. It's, to me, the lens cap is cheesy. I'm sorry. I don't like it. But I love the strap, and I love having the unique skin on it. This Fox Brown looks really cool. $899. Not a bad price for that camera anyway. And especially one, and I'm not thinking so much of collectors here, although, you know, that's nice. I dig collecting. But I'm just thinking of having something that is different than everyone else's, a little unique. And I know when I, so funny, when I have my lizard skin edition, when I'm shooting with it, you know, I kind of like do the thing where you sort of, you know, put it in front of people there, you know, because I want them to say something. I want them to notice it. They never do. They never say anything, but I want them to. And now the Fox Brown would be even more distinctive. Maybe they'll say something if I had that instead. It's available now, and I like it. Springtime cleaning, a note from MacPaw. So the good folks at MacPaw, they're jumping on the time of year thing here real well. the spring cleaning thing, the urge that we all feel, hey, I got to tidy up, And you can clean up space on your Mac. You can clean up for the new photo shoots that you have planned ahead. And Clean My Mac 3 by MacPaw is the perfect way to do it. You can get rid of those extra files, retrieve precious disk space, speed up the performance, you know, all that good stuff. It frees up RAM. Some of the things that it does, it cleans up your hard drive, speeds up your system, removes excess content from caches in the Photos app, which that can add up, believe me. And then it can uninstall apps and add-ons that aren't needed. And the best part about it, if you're in a spring cleaning mode for your computer, getting ready for those shoots that are coming up, you can get 30% off any of the configurations of Clean My Mac by visiting our landing page. We have a landing page there. The link is in the show notes, or you can just go to macpaw.com, macpaw.com/TDS. Go there, take advantage of the 30% off. You can buy Clean My Mac for one Mac, or you can buy a family pack, whatever you want to do. I'll tell you a little inside thing here. Now, almost all my recording for lynda.com happens in my own studio. And I don't go to Carpinteria hardly at all anymore. You know, I have the setup here. I can do it to their specification. And it's cheaper for them because they don't have to pay for my travel and hotel and everything. And it's easier for me to do updates. I don't have to go back and forth. So anyway, when I really appreciated Clean My Mac, was that after I finish a title, boy, you know, when I'm working on a title on this computer, it gets full. There's all sorts of testing. It gets, you know, just kind of gets kludgy. I run Clean My Mac 3 on it, cleans everything up, and then I'm ready to record the next title. It's really a nice way to reset and refresh and be ready to go for the next project, especially if you've been doing something with a lot of stuff going on. So anyway, macpaw.com/TDS, Clean My Mac 3, get that discount. It's only good, by the way, this discount doesn't run forever. It's only good until March 10th, all right? So don't dilly-dally. Go over there, get it, have it on your hard drive. It's really slick software. Member quotes of the week, intelligent comments culled from the Digital Story Facebook page. So in regard to last week's post, the reluctant portrait photographer, I got a few comments for you on that. So Matthew wrote, the reluctant photographer was a great segment. Besides the don't be creepy advice, I knew you guys are going to like that. I appreciated the be professional tip. Such a simple thing that makes a world of difference. That is so true. And Tilly wrote, hey, Derek, thanks for your comments and insights about portrait photography in The Reluctant Photographer. I just had to laugh. Don't be creepy. Seriously, it's so important to make a genuine connection with clients and to keep the conversation going. Be authentic. And I think be authentic really just sums it up very well. Now, the only time that be authentic doesn't work is that if you're genuinely creepy, then being authentic just, okay, you know where I'm going here. Anyway, thanks for your comment, Tilly, and I do agree with you. And Joe added, really useful advice in The Reluctant Portrait Photographer. I'm prone to geek out on cool lighting effects, so it's good to be reminded that rapport with people is what really counts with portraits. And that is something that I run into all the time too, is that I just fall into this absorption with my gear and the lighting and the, you know, all that I forget to talk. So one thing that I've done on that is that if you have someone that can come over and be an assistant who's a good conversationalist, they can save you from that. So if you do have a complicated setup and you know you're not gonna be able to chat as much, have that person come, have them kind of keep the conversation going, chime in when you can, and that might help alleviate the situation a bit. So anyway, I appreciate everyone's comments on our Facebook page. You know, go over there, hang out, be a part of the conversation. It's fun. I love hearing your thoughts and, you know, what's on your mind. And, you know, we have another thing going right now. I don't know if you saw the post today, but if you had to pick one film camera from the past that you craved but couldn't afford, what would it be? Because I'm going to talk about that on next week's show. We got a lot of comments there already. If you want to chime in on that, go over facebook.com/thedigitalstory. Cool accessory, the Tamrec Goblin Body Pouch. So, and I'm assuming it's Goblin. I'm not sure why. G-O-B-L-I-N. Why they named it that. It's a cool thing, though. So the Tamrec Goblin Body Pouch, and I like 1.4, is part of an entire line of handy, affordable stash bags for your gear. And these, they're so simple, but they're so handy. They are literally little stash bags. They have a quilted interior, ripstop nylon exterior. They come in three colors, kiwi, ocean, and pumpkin. They have an easy-to-cinch drawstring. And essentially, remember when I was talking about a backup body? This is like really cool, perfect for that. You just take your backup body with a pancake lens or whatever, and you just either slide it into, they have two pouches that that I'm going to test here. The 1.4 measures 4.2 inches across by 5 inches tall by 3.5 inches. It sells for $18.95. And then there's also a slimmer, longer model, the 1.0, and it has dimensions of 4.0 inches by 6.2 by 2.2. So it's taller and a little thinner, and that sells for $16.95. So you can just slide your body in there, pull the drawstring. It's water resistant. You know, it's all padded on the inside. It's really nice. It's affordable. And then, you know, you can just have that that body. You can have it loose in your camera bag or in your backpack or whatever, and it'll probably be okay. I just think they're really neat. I love having protective gear that's light and affordable and, you know, really pretty colors too. So anyway, I have a link in the show notes. I have links to everything in the show notes. Tamrec Goblin Body Pouch, really cool and pretty affordable too. Updates and such. So we're down to one seat on the Point Reyes Photography Workshop. We have one room open. And it's August 19th through 21. We're hanging out at Strauss House in Point Reyes area. We have the run of the house. We have the whole house. There are rooms upstairs where people can room. And then we have kitchen and big space downstairs in the middle of this cool ranch, in the middle of this great environment. I mean, really, really neat stuff. And talk about being able to get away and focus on your stuff. You're there for photography, so you don't have to negotiate. You don't have to do anything. You just have to relax and take pictures and enjoy yourself. So we have one seat open on that. If you're interested, just go to the workshops page on The Digital Story. We have the send me info thing there, and just do that, and I'll get right back to you. And finally, I want to mention the good folks over at Red River Paper, who have just made my printing life so much easier. Thank you, guys. And I think I mentioned last week that part of what I'm doing on the film project is going to be printing on fiber-based paper. And I don't know if you realize this, but you can run fiber paper through your inkjet printer, the same kind of paper that you used to use in the darkroom and develop in the tray. They have that for inkjet printers. Red River Paper has some fantastic stuff in this area. And if you really want the look and feel of a chemical darkroom print, especially the feel part of it, go over to Red River Paper, check it out. They have a tile on all the pages of The Digital Story. Go to our landing page there. And they have a fantastic Facebook page at facebook.com/redriverpaper. All right, that's going to do it for me this week. Really enjoyed spending time with you. Get out there, take some pictures, be safe doing it, come home with some great shots, and then meet me back here next week for another edition of Digital Story. Bye-bye now.